Call Art Bell from west of the Rockies at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. First-time callers may reach Art at area code 775-727-1222 or call the wildcard line at 775-727-1295. To talk with Art on the toll-free international line, call your AT&T operator and have them dial 800-893-0903. This is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
The Grey Goose scenario, huh? Mark Pesce is our guest, and he is without question. You can see his website, by the way, playfulworld.com. We've got a link up on ours right now at www.artbell.com. But Mark is internationally recognized as a man who brought virtual reality into the World Wide Web. That's no small matter indeed. And just before we get back to him, a couple of things, including a couple of commercials. From Reuters, here's some news I'm sure you wanted to hear. A suspected case of the human form of foot and mouth disease is being investigated in northern England. According to the BBC, the suspected case found in Cumbria, a center of the foot and mouth epidemic sweeping Britain now, it has not been confirmed by authorities, and another 48 hours at minimum are going to be required for confirmation. But if it's happened, then I guess foot and mouth has jumped to human beings. Are you surprised? Anybody watch the NASDAQ today? Tanked about 109 points, actually. There are so many things going on. For example, volatility, that doesn't even do justice to what's going on. Barron's just put out an article entitled, Dow 2500? From Barron's? Are you afraid of losing more money in today's markets? You don't have to be. There is a way to protect your investments, but you certainly need to know where to look and what to buy. So listen to me carefully. Gold is one hedge, obviously. We all know that. Diversification is the answer to this kind of fear. And it's justified fear, I might add. Gold has a 20% profit margin built right in. So, listen, why would brokerage houses consider this? Why would Prudential and Goldman Sachs be turning to gold themselves? Call my friends at Lear Financial and request their free gold diversification guide. The guide will lay it all out for you. What gold has to offer, show you step by step how you can use gold to protect and grow your savings and retirement. Mention my name and they'll toss in this brand new audio seminar, How to Safely Double Your Investment Returns with Gold. A $29 value for both, absolutely free. Now, if you call now, you'll get an automated answering service. It's very important you leave your return number. If you want to call during the day, that's fine too. Here's the number. Whether it's now or later, call it. 800-474-4259. That's 800-474-4259. One more time. 800-474-4259. It's scary out there, isn't it? Would you like to feel 10 years younger in 10 weeks? That's how it begins. And then you begin to actually look younger. By about 6 months, all kinds of things are happening. A 14.4% loss of fat on average without dieting. 8.8% increase in muscle mass without exercising. That's at 6 months. Higher energy levels, better sexual performance, less wrinkling of the skin, your immune function improves, better exercise performance, improved memory, vision, improved cholesterol, regeneration of the heart, lungs, liver, kidneys. Obviously, you begin looking better. I just say younger and younger. It's ultimate HGH, human growth hormone. The deal is simple. It's about $33 a month. That's what the regimen costs, about $33 a month. Compares quite favorably to the $100 a month for competitive products. And we throw in a book all about HGH so you can read about what's happening to you. It's a deal you shouldn't refuse. It's a really good deal. Call Great American Products at 1-800-557-4627. Younger and younger. 1-800-557-4627. You know, Mark, we really live in interesting times with regard to disease, mad cow disease, foot and mouth, and all these weird diseases jumping to humans and all kinds of strange things happening. One of the possible saviors down line would be nanotechnology, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. There are already on the drawing board designs for artificial blood using nanotechnology. And further down the line, a device known as a nanosurgeon, which would be able to be injected into your body, not just one, but perhaps even 100 million of them, be able to go through your bloodstream, look at individual cells, find diseased cells, find cancerous cells, and cause them to self-destruct or tag them so they can be picked up by your own immune system and disposed of. So a fully realized nanotechnology, say 20 to 50 years from now, promises an incredible increase in human longevity and also a disease-free lifespan.
Mark, who should be watching the scientists? Should there be government involvement? I'm sure you don't welcome that.
No, actually, I think that's absolutely important.
Oh, you do?
I do. I think that it's important to have a broad public discussion.
So then if I were a senator and I had you sitting in front of me as a witness and I said to Ms. Pesci, what are your recommendations with regard to how we watch this technology develop and or regulate it, how would you answer that?
Well, there was a report that was just published last month. It came from the office of the president because, in fact, the Clinton administration really dramatically increased the amount of funding for nanotechnology initiatives in the last couple of years of his presidency.
Uh-huh.
And one of the primary recommendations of the report is to educate people in nanotechnology and to educate the scientists in the ethical dimensions of the use of that and abuse of that technology. So really, I think what we need to do is to generate as much awareness as possible about what's coming, that this is the revolution that's just behind the biotechnology revolution. We can see three revolutions. We had a computer revolution, we're in a biotechnology revolution, and we're about to see a nanotechnology revolution sweeping in just behind it, just a few years behind it. And people aren't even aware that we're on the cusp of it.
Well, they're getting that way tonight. Now, you gave us the gray goo scenario, which would be Armageddon. That would be the end.
It would be, yes.
So obviously, like the Cold War, when people get that, they're not going to release it because it would be suicidal. However, aside from that ultimate weapon, let's for a second just imagine what sort of military applications can you imagine for nanotechnology? If you were at war with a nation, how would you use it against another nation?
You could produce a nanobot that would destroy a very specific type of material. Perhaps it would look for explosives and break them down into inert components so that someone's guns wouldn't fire.
Oh.
So you could do something as targeted as that, as simple as that. And so when you think about a smart bomb, this is, in fact, the ultimate sort of tininess of a smart bomb, in that it can go and defuse a bomb. Or you could take another type of nanobot and have it replicate so that it produced an explosive out of an inert material. You could perhaps transform a clay surface into an explosive surface.
What if you wanted to kill only Iraqi people?
Then you'd probably have to look at something that was very specifically targeted at the genome of a particular class of people. That sounds to me like it would be a little bit more difficult to do. Or, conceivably, you could distribute a widespread weapon but only distribute the antidote to your own side. But there are a lot of dangers in that.
You mean to the one doing the dispersing?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's any time you release something into the environment, there's obviously the chance that it could mutate.
Mm. But, or, I mean, the military is going to be in love with this technology.
They already are. They're funding it.
Uh-huh. They are, huh?
Oh, yes. Yes, the funding is coming from DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, the same agency that gave us the Internet 30 years ago, and from the federal government and also from universities. So you have places like MIT, University of Michigan, University of California, Los Angeles, places like this that are really becoming hotbeds of nanotechnology research and that are really going to be the focal centers for the nanotechnology revolution.
If you were a scientist working in that area, when the U.S. military came to you, you can imagine what their interest would be. Would you accept that funding to keep doing what you want to do?
I personally would not. I personally would want to focus on the positive applications of nanotechnology, that nanotechnology would quickly be capable of wiping out any disease or any sort of malnutrition, that you could take garbage materials, literally throw some nanites or bugs onto the top of this and then convert it into edible food.
Yes, or conversely, wiping out the human race.
Exactly. And so I would want to, as far as I could, work on the positive aspects of it. And I think that's one reason why the ethical dimension of this technology needs to be examined closely, because it promises so much and threatens so much. They're really, in a sense, a perfectly equal balance.
So then, Senator Bell again asks, what precise regulation would you recommend to this committee?
Well, I think the nanotechnology research needs to be conducted on the same kinds of safeguards that we would do very sort of dangerous biological research, that we need to develop the kinds of facilities that can prevent things from getting into the environment accidentally, or otherwise you're going to have an Andromeda strain scenario where something is created that can't be contained or controlled and will destroy any population it encounters.
So then the equivalent of the CDC should be formed.
Yeah, yes, or it may in fact be a branch of the CDC, because it, again, when you get down to this level, the differences between biology and nanotechnology start become very indistinct. They start to blur.
One would imagine many countries about the world would be hard at work at this right now. The Japanese, for example, they're really good in these sorts of areas. They would be, I would think, involved, are they?
The Japanese just produced a single electron, a single atom transistor.
Well, there you are.
So the Japanese are right alongside with the Americans and the Britons. The British are also right alongside with the Americans in this field, and we're really the three powers, with America by far being in the lead with the most researchers working on this. Now, one of the most interesting things that's being done long-term, one of the longest projects that's been going on, has been NASA's project to use nanotechnology for space exploration. The reason being that right now spacecraft are very large, and when they're very large, it means it costs a lot of money to put them into orbit to send them to another planet.
Sure does.
And when you only have one of them, if it happens to crash, you're out of luck.
That's true.
So instead, why don't you produce 50 or 100 million small craft, deliver them in a small missile, release them, say, onto the surface of Mars, let them gather their data and send it back. And so this is now a very efficient way of doing it, because even if you lose half the spacecraft, you still have 50 million spacecraft.
Well, then, wait a minute here, Mark. If you're talking about Mars and releasing something on Mars, then why not release some form of the gray goo scenario on Mars? And why, before you know it, you'll have yourself a habitable planet, hello there, with an atmosphere and water and growing stuff and maybe even little furry things running around.
It's been talked about. We don't know how to do something like that yet, but clearly when we, as we grow into a fully realized nanotechnology, something like that will become more and more within the realm of possibility, and perhaps in another generation or two there will be the moral equivalent of an Apollo project to green Mars.
Wow. This is amazing. All right, let's come back to reality, today's reality, for a moment. Video games. Sony's new PlayStation 2.
Yep.
And I guess Microsoft's Xbox?
Yes, that's what it's called. It's going to be released in October.
They have made such a jump. do they begin to blur the line between reality and simulation?
Well, back when people were first working in virtual reality, so in the late 80s, early 90s, it was believed that you could create realistic images if you could create about 80 million little units that your eyes can see per second. If you could create these 80 million units, they figured it would be pretty much indistinguishable from the real thing. Well, with the PlayStation 2 and with the Xbox, we've gotten to that point. And if you've seen some of the things that have come out, some of the NFL games, some of the racing games, quite often when you look at them, you have to do a double take because you can't quite tell if that's a video image or if that's a computer-generated image. So we're now starting to enter this area of blurriness, whether we can tell if it's a computer-generated image or if it's, in fact, a live image of some sort.
So what are we liable to have by the time we get to Sony PlayStation 10 or 20? It's another way of asking, where is that going?
Well, right now, computer graphics and the kind that we use to say home video games are increasing not as fast as Moore's Law. They're not getting twice as good every 18 months. They're getting 8 times as good.
Really?
Every 18 months. It's Moore's Law cubed. So between 1995 and 2000, computer graphics got 1,000 times better. Between 2000 and 2005, everyone expects that they will get 1,000 times better again. So you don't have to wait for the PlayStation 10. You have to wait for the PlayStation 3, which Sony has already announced will be 1,000 times faster.
Oh, my God.
Than the PlayStation 2.
Really? Oh, my.
At that point,
yes,
there really won't be any strict difference between live video and a computer-generated image, at least none that your eye can easily see. I've seen a prototype for the PlayStation 3, something called the GS Cube, which is still itself only about 1/16 as powerful as the PlayStation 3 will be. And it was just absolutely stunning. The images were so clear, so beautiful, so crisp, and so realistic that you can clearly see that by the time 2005 comes around, we will be there. We will be at this blurring between real imagery and computer-generated imagery.
Well, how far of a leap is it from PlayStation 3 or 4 to the holodeck on Star Trek?
The holodeck is really just a matter of how do we project it. Right now, that's been a big problem. We have television sets, we have monitors, we have flat panel displays.
Right.
But we don't have an environment we can stand up and walk around in.
Yet.
We had the head-mounted display, which everyone was looking at 10 years ago as being the way we'd get into the holodeck. Well, it turns out the head-mounted display is really bad for your eyes, which is why we're not all wearing them now. And so,
yeah, I've seen them advertised, and I've been tempted, and I don't know why I haven't gone for one, but it's not so good for your eyes, huh?
It'll give you, at the minimum, it'll give you a headache. It'll give you eye strain. In the worst case, it'll cause something called binocular dysphoria. Because what happens is when you put the head mount on, your eyes are seeing the world in a different way than you see it in the real world. And your brain learns that way, so that when you take the head mount off again, your brain is still thinking in the way it was when you were in the head mounted display.
Uh-huh.
And this is not such a big problem for adults. Adults will come back anywhere between 20 minutes and 24 hours. But for children, and these video game companies were going to release these and sell them to children, could actually cause perhaps permanent changes in brain function.
In other words, their little brains, which are just in the formative stages, would or could perhaps take that as the reality, and then the real world would be the non-reality for them.
Exactly, and they would have trouble moving through the real world because their brains had adapted to something that wasn't real. Mid-1990s, I participated in a project with Sega, the video game company,
yes,
developing a head-mounted display. And we got it all the way through the design process and ready for production, and they sent it out for testing.
Right.
And when they sent it out for testing, the testing company came back and said, you cannot give these devices to children. Well, Sega said, thank you very much. We're going to take the results. We're going to take the project. We're going to bury it. The company that actually did the testing, SRI, went and retested on their own dime so they could release the results to the public because the results were important enough that they needed to be widely known. So head-mounted display use is fine for, say, 20 minutes or less. It won't really hurt you, although I wouldn't give it to a child for that length of time. But in terms of this holodeck world where we'd be sitting inside of our head-mounted display and the world would be projected around us,
right,
that doesn't seem to be a good way to do it. Now, there's just some breaking technology of people who are starting to do holographic projection inside of 3D globes.
Excuse me? Inside 3D globes?
So you can think of a clear glass globe.
Yes.
And they can project a 3D environment inside of it. You look into it almost as if you're looking into a crystal ball. And you can see a world inside of that. That technology has just entered the prototype stage. They've just gotten it working. But that may be one way of having a holodeck. Now, clearly, you're not inside that environment, but you can see into it, and it's fully 3D. You don't need to wear any fancy glasses. It's just there in front of you, and that may be one direction it's going in.
Suppose we made it all the way to holodeck, where you create a complete new reality all about you. You don't have the glasses on. It's all about you in 3D.
Right.
That presumably will be possible one day, right?
I would suggest that a better way to do that, rather than using a projection technology,
yes,
is to use nanotechnology. Remember what I said earlier
you
about...
mean, to actually create that world.
Create the objects themselves out of material.
I
think that's going to be the cheaper, safer, more satisfying route for people, is to have a holodeck that it doesn't use objects made out of light.
Well, but the problem with that is you are then literally creating an alternate reality, because it is a reality. And so... But we're almost up to the Matrix here, in a way.
Absolutely. I think there's going to be a point 20 years from now or so,
yes,
when the difference between the synthetic world and the physical world is going to have blurred completely. Now, for the kids who are growing up with these kinds of video games, they're not going to have an issue with it. They've been used to it all of their lives. For us, it's going to be a little bit more disorienting, because we're never going to know what really real is. Going to make a difference for us.
But wouldn't that be fatally dangerous for mankind, in the sense that people would be able to create their own realities, and in every sense of the word, reality, an alternate reality, and to hell with this world in every way, just why not live in this idyllic created reality?
It would be a fatal flaw if it cut us off from other human beings. Otherwise, it wouldn't be qualitatively different than the worlds we see showing up in cyberspace, the chat environments, the websites, the webs of connectivity by which humans create their own mental spaces and gather and congregate. It would simply be a physical manifestation of it.
I know, but I mean, people would be creating Britney Spears land, right?
Indeed they would.
Well, how do you stop a human being from preferring that over the real world? Hold that answer. Hold that answer. We'll be right back. Weird Stuff. I'm Art Bell.